It's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life. Oh yeah, it's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life.
Our next guest on Downtown is a talented actress who has appeared in films like Suspiria, My Favorite Year, Minority Report, television shows including It's Gary Shandling Show. And she'll be back for the second season of The Old Man with Jeff Bridges, Amy Brenneman, and John Lithgow. She's also a talented author and singer-songwriter. Hey, that's her singing right now. We are pleased to be joined here on Downtown by the talented Jessica Harper. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. Very interested to talk about your career, which is has covered a lot of ground, and it seems to be a career that is very much of your own making, that you have decided the different directions you would go along the way.
That's true. Instinctively, yes. I find that in show business, you do have to sort of create your own path forward because nobody will do it for you. And if you have a creative drive, it can take you in all kinds of interesting directions.
And that started when you were young, right? You did dance when you were very young, and graphic arts. Was it college that led you into acting and first exposed you to getting up on stage?
Actually, it was dropping out of college that got me into, into my first job. I was at Sarah Lawrence College in New York, and yes, I was studying modern dance, and I was doing painting, I was doing all kinds of things. And I thought, ultimately, it might be more fun to be in the theater where you could jump up and down and sing and dance and all that fun stuff. And as it happened, I dropped out of college because it was the 60s and dropping out of college was trending, as you know. and I followed that trend. But when I dropped out, I discovered that actually I had no plan B. So I dropped in at a college that I was familiar with, Wesleyan University, because I had a boyfriend there. And then my mother sent me a clipping from the New York Times that said that the Broadway show Hair, which at the time was a smash hit musical, were having open auditions for the cast, which they were refreshing after the show had been running for a few months. So I had this crazy idea that I would audition for it. My boyfriend, Robin, I talked my boyfriend into playing backup guitar for me, and we gassed up his terrible Toyota and drove to New York. And we got there, and there were about 500 hippies lined up around the block waiting to open for the waiting to audition for the show. And so we stood there for quite some time in the cold, drinking coffee, and we were finally admitted by this sort of lovely middle-aged casting assistant who looked as if he heard one more bad singer, he was going to shoot himself. And I walked in. Luckily, we did okay. And the rest is history. Both Robin and I were offered roles in Hair. So that was my kickstart for this crazy career I've had ever since.
And then you were doing, I think, an off-Broadway show, and Brian De Palma saw you, and that led to, and I'm looking right over your shoulder and seeing the poster for Phantom of the Paradise there, which is a much loved film to so many of us who appreciate everything that went into that. And I would say it was maybe ahead of its time, or perhaps more correctly, it's just of its own time.
I think you could say both things in a way. It was prescient in some ways. Yeah, there were some elements of it that were precursors to, say, the style of rock that was evolving at that time, and also to Brian De Palma's developing style, which was really striking in that movie and continued to be sensational. And I remember auditioning for that movie. Yes, I was in this off-Broadway show called Dr. Saleeby's Magic Theater. It was a kind of a crazy musical directed by Richard Foreman, an avant-garde director. And it was down at the Mercer Arts Center in Soho. And this was in the 70s. So I was in this show, and it was one of those things that happens in New York, one of these phenomenons where Clive Barnes wrote a rave review of the show, which was in the New York Times. And so every theater geek in the city, every agent, every producer, every writer flocked to see this show in this tiny theater. And so I got a lot of exposure, as did, of course, the other cast members. We all benefited from that. But Brian De Palma came one night, yes, and he saw me, and he was at the time casting this movie called Phantom of the Paradise, a sort of takeoff on Phantom of the Opera, and he was looking for the female lead. And after he saw me in Dr. Saleeby's Magic Theater, he invited me to come and audition for Paul Williams, whom we all know as the sensational songwriter of songs like Rainy Days and Mondays and many, many other
And a
classics.
wonderful friend of our show, too.
Oh, is he really?
Oh,
Oh, that's
yes.
nice. Yeah. Hi, Paul. I remember making a few mistakes before I went to this audition. Number one, I wore high heels to meet a man who was already shorter than me. Number two, my therapist had suggested that to cure the pre-audition jitters, I should, before I went in, drink 2 tablespoons of vodka. So I took his advice, perhaps foolishly, which led me to ask Paul the inane question, do rainy days and Mondays really get you down? By the time I was down, I thought, okay, I made so many audition faux pas, I don't think I could possibly get this role. And then I got this phone call, and it was Brian De Palma. And he said, do you want to go to Hollywood? So, very shortly after that, I was on a plane to Hollywood where I had never been. And they put me up at the Chateau Marmont, the legendary hotel where, all kinds of fabulous people have stayed. And the next day I auditioned. I don't, I sort of have no memory of that. It's one of those blank days. But that evening I remember very well because we went to Musso and Frank's Grill, Brian and I, and the costume designer joined us at the dinner table. And in the middle of dinner, she took me into the ladies' room and took very detailed measurements of my body, which I thought was either a good sign or a very peculiar form of assault. I don't know. Luckily, it turned out to be the former. And joining us at the table that night also was a young and very kind of jumpy young director. It turned out to be Martin Scorsese. He and Brian De Palma and Steven Spielberg were like a trifecta of geniuses on their way up. So they hung out a lot together. Anyway, so that was a spectacular. So that was a great intro to Hollywood. And I was very nervous, of course, because, of course, this was a life-changing possibility. And my competition was Linda Ronstadt,
Wow.
which did not make me feel any less uneasy. But the rest is history. Linda Ronstadt did not quit her day job, and I starred in Phantom of the Paradise.
Worked out well for both of you there.
That sure did.
I know for a number of people, when your name is mentioned, they will think immediately of Suspiria. It has become such a beloved film through the years and so unique, I think, in the horror genre because of the style, the creativity of Dario Argento. Did you have an audition for that film, or am I right that it was more a conversation than an actual audition?
It was a conversation, a little bit awkward because I didn't know Italian, and Dario's English was limited. But I found he had seen Phantom of the Paradise, and he liked my performance. So that's what drew me to his attention, and he very kindly offered me the role without making me read anything, which is the most incredible gift for an actor. And that was the beginning of a long and very interesting ride.
I want to talk about love and death and the way things sort of come full circle here, because you're our second guest in just a few weeks who hailed from Winnetka. The other was the director, Ed Zwick, who told us the story about meeting Woody Allen in the streets of Paris, running into him while he was shooting Love and Death, and sort of getting permission from Woody to come observe the filmmaking process.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah. I had a small part in that, which was really, really fun. Of course, it was fun to fly to Paris to do it. And of course, I was just completely bedazzled by the idea of working with him. And he offered me a role in Annie Hall after that as well, but I was on my way to do Suspiria, so I didn't accept it. It was, I don't know what else to say.
A film that is such a favorite of mine, and I have loved it. The critics were sort of so-so on the whole thing, but I was fascinated that in the recent Steve Martin documentary, he talked about how surprised he was that Pennies from Heaven did not become an enormous hit. But I love that movie so much. Such a brilliant cast with you and Steve and Bernadette Peters, Chris Walken, just a wonderful film.
Yeah, that movie is incredible. I love that movie. I always like movies that just crash through boundaries. I love movies that crash through the boundaries and do something completely new. And I just thought it was amazing. And Steve was so amazing. I mean, you know, Steve Martin singing a song to the audience in the voice of a 1930s female singer and tap dancing, you know, you've got a movie. And Christopher Walken doing that incredible tap dance on the top of the bar, and Bernadette, I mean, it's just, and Vernell Banneries, who did that beautiful, beautiful song, Pennies from Heaven, the title song. And that sequence, I found, was one of the most beautiful things I ever saw. It was just great. I'm so sorry that it didn't catch people's imagination the way I think it should have.
And it holds up so well. I saw it just a few months ago. I think it was on cable, and I sat there enthralled as I was all those years ago. And it's, if anything, it's more powerful today because it is so different from anything else that's out there.
Exactly. It's just sui generis. It's a movie all its own. Very, very. I'm very proud to have anything to do with that.
We're talking with Jessica Harper here on Downtown. I'm excited to talk with you about one of my all-time favorite films. I'm a high school theater director, and I have directed the musical version of it. My Favorite Year is just such an incredible film on so many levels. A great cast with you, Mark Lynn Baker, Peter O'Toole, Joe Bologna. And I thought great direction, too, by a guy who I don't think gets enough credit, Richard Benjamin, who was such a talent as both an actor and director.
Yeah, wonderful actor, Richard Benjamin, and such a kind man, lovely to work with. I had a lot of fun working on that. Mark Lynn Baker was wonderful. You know, my only problem was that I was sort of daunted by the prospect of doing scenes with Lawrence of Arabia, you know, with, on one hand, a dream, on the other, kind of a terrifying. But he was great in the movie, really wonderful. It was fun. It's a funny movie.
And you worked with another Hollywood superstar more recently in Minority Report with Tom Cruise, who, by all accounts from everybody who have worked with him, he is just, he's a pro when he's on the set and just has an infectious love of filmmaking. Was that your experience too?
Yeah, the truth is, I didn't actually have scenes with him. I had scenes with Max von Sydow, who murders me in the movie, which is, I'm very honored to say that, by the way, to have had that experience. He's such an incredible actor, and I knew him from, you know, the Bergman films and so on. So that was really fun to be in this really scary scene. I got drowned, very viciously drowned. It was a shoot that took all day and the following day to recover. But it was really fascinating to also to work, of course, with Steven Spielberg and just to watch his incredibly sort of easy expertise. You know, he would stride onto the set and just, I never worked with a director who seemed to know that precisely what he wanted to do and how to do it. Just with a genius's precision and also with great kindness and support. He was really wonderful.
Well, what does that do for an actor? What does that give you some additional freedom when a director is pretty certain about what they want?
Yes. Freedom because you can trust him 100% to deliver you. There's freedom because you trust him 100%. You know he won't let you do anything stupid. and so he gives you confidence. So that situation gives you confidence and as you say, allows you to be free and just follow your instincts and trust that it'll be fine.
You worked on what I think is one of the most inventive shows in all of television history. It's Gary Shandling's show. Alan's wife, Belle, has been on with us a couple of times talking about that process. And working with Gary, which sometimes had its challenges, but the final product is something that I think everybody has to be proud of. It was, again, so cutting edge and so different than anything else.
I was so happy to get that job. Again, because I love to work on a project like that is groundbreaking and new and different, as Pennies from Heaven was. And I found working with Gary just really fun and interesting because he was so talented, of course. And I had not done a sitcom before. I guess you call that a sitcom, although that somehow that term doesn't seem to quite cover it with regard to Gary's work. But he and Alan also seemed to trust me, and so they also let me have my freedom and do what I want. And I that was wonderful. So they had more confidence in me than I did in myself.
Was there some improvisation involved?
As I recall, there was some, because I think sometimes when there is improvisation, you can find the gems that might not otherwise surface. And I think there was some of that, although to be honest, I don't remember. You know, when I started that job, it was 6 weeks after I had given birth. So I was probably in a little bit of a brain fog for a while, but they very generously let me bring my baby backstage often. So that was very nice. She got an early exposure to show business and is now herself in the theater business. So
I loved your work in a wonderful series with Jeff Bridges, John Lithgow. The Old Man is so wonderful. And I just heard in the last couple days that we will get to see a season two here, perhaps this fall.
Yes, in September, I believe it's starting the season two. I have work in season five in a very juicy episode, which I hope everyone will see. It's Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow and Amy Brenneman and I in a house sort of trapped by, well, circumstances that I won't tell you about right now. But, and we had a rehearsal for it, which is, as many people know, kind of unusual for television. Mm. But this was such an intense, dramatic scene. that it required some advanced rehearsal. It really did. And so I got to be in this rehearsal room watching Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow and Amy forming their performances, which was so fabulous. Jeff in particular had to go through a very powerful emotional moment in the scene. And just watching him come to that over the course of this rehearsal day was a lesson in process and in excellence. He's just amazing. Of course, so is John Lithgow, who plays my husband, and Amy's wonderful and warm. It was just a great cast, very cozy. We all liked each other, and I hope everybody will continue to watch the series because I think it's really so good.
Yeah, you mentioned process. What is your process for finding those emotional moments, those moments of on stage, on camera honesty?
Well, one, I like to figure out intellectually what the proper approach is to each piece of dialogue. I really enjoy that process. So I figure that out first before, and then that allows me to tap into the appropriate emotions for the dialogue, the emotional place that I should be in when I speak. And I don't, at this point, I think it's because I've had years of experience, I don't find it difficult to go there. I find that if I know what I'm saying and why and to whom solidly, intellectually, I can tap right into the honesty that I need to have, emotional honesty. So, and I'm not saying that I may do it wrong sometimes, I'm sure I often do, but I think at least I feel pretty confident that I'm in the right place.
Is it easy to walk away from that when the scene ends? Can you step out of that and come back into real life easily?
I don't think that's so hard, really. What's hard sometimes is repeating the scene over and over and the long pauses in between, trying to hold on to that in between lighting setups, for example. Sometimes that can take hours. And then you have to jump back in emotionally. And that's challenging, but you can kind of learn, I think, to turn it on and off and not lose it after a time. I try my best to do that, but it's sometimes very difficult.
You have had this whole other wonderful career of creating children's books, children's music, and I first heard It's a Wonderful Life several years ago, and a friend was playing it, and I said, who is that? Well, I love that song. And oh, that's Jessica Harper, the actress. Oh. Yes. And all of it is so wonderful and so smart. Sometimes entertainment aimed at children takes a low road, but you don't. I mean, in books and in your music, it's intelligent, it's smart, and it's respectful of young people.
You know, I just read this a book recently by C.S. Lewis writing his letters, and he said, if, you know, for his books, he thought that if the books should please adults as well as children, mm-hmm. if they didn't, then they weren't good. And I always, you know, I had two little daughters when I started creating these songs, and I never wanted to condescend to them. I wanted the songs to be really up to my standards as good songs and good arrangements, really. And my standards may not be the same as everybody's, but my aim was that parents should be able to listen to this music and enjoy it as well as children. Otherwise it wasn't good. And there is, as you say, so much children's music out there that condescends. So I like to think of this as family music, and hopefully others will too.
Yeah, very much so. So when I knew you were going to be coming on with us just to do a little research, I said, well, I'll check out the first episode of Winnetka, your podcast. And I was hooked immediately. And I listened to the entire show, every episode in about 2 days, because I was so fascinated to find out what was going on with your family. And it was such a powerful story. And though it was about your family specifically, I think it's something that everybody can relate to, because we've all got those secrets. We've all got those struggles that we've dealt with along the way. But what was the inspiration for you in telling that story and being so public with some of those private stories?
Well, it's a good question. Some years ago, I was doing some writing. I wrote some things for a magazine, and the editors said to me, would you consider doing a podcast for us, creating a podcast? And I couldn't imagine what that would be. And he said, well, it could be about your family. And I said, and I went home to my husband and I said, why would such a thing be interesting to anybody? Which is, I think, oftentimes memoir writers probably ask themselves that. But my husband said, oh no, your family is very interesting. So I thought, all right, well, I'll try. And I just started writing this memoir. And then I decided to do it as an audio, because which is why its final form is in a podcast rather than a published memoir, because I like the idea of breaking up barriers in terms of audio entertainment too. That when I listen to audiobooks, for example, I love audiobooks, but none of them incorporate the kinds of things that I wanted to incorporate, such as I interview my family members, so you actually hear the voices of the characters in the book, and also I incorporate a lot of music in the piece. So it really wasn't suitable at that time for the audiobook market, which hopefully will make some breakthroughs like that sooner rather than later. But at the time, the podcast format seemed like the best. And I love working in sound. I mean, it's doing the editing and putting it together was really fascinating, and I just loved doing it. And also, of course, the material was very close to my heart, and I have the pleasure now of listening to my mother, who's passed, but I have her voice telling her story. It's still in my phone. There it is. I can listen to my mother. She was a wonderful character who had a great, interesting history. And to my one of my brothers has passed as well. So I have the voices of my family, although some of them are no longer here. And I have a story that, as you say, a lot of people find relatable.
I have a dear friend who is a fraternal twin and has another set of fraternal twins. There are four of them in their family. I said, you must listen to this podcast. I think you're going to find some truth in there.
Yeah. At one point, my mother had 6 children under the age of 8 because she had 2 sets of twins. Yeah, that was pretty insane.
And I was listening to you talk about the plague of locusts that hit back in the late 50s, just as I had read, I think, in the New York Times about these giant spiders that are making their way to the Northeast this summer and fall. I thought, well, here we go.
Your own personal plague.
Well, it was wonderful. I enjoyed Winnetka so much, and it was the story was great, but the production was fabulous on it as well.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you liked it, and I hope some of your listeners will check it out.
Yeah, sure. Hope they do. You can go to your website and pick up more information about it at jessicaharper.com. Jessica, it's been a real treat to talk with you. I've enjoyed your work for so many years. I look forward to seeing the new season of The Old Man, and really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thank you so much. Also, I want to put in a plug for a movie called Night Bitch that's coming out in December, starring Amy Adams, that I have a role in, and it's a wonderful movie. I hope people will see.
I can't wait to see that too. Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us, Jessica.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
The wonderful Jessica Harper. Man, that sounds great. With Amy Adams coming up later in the year, Night Bitch. Jessica Harper with us on Downtown. It is 11 before 5 o'clock.